Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The General Assembly is likely to debate how police officers are disciplined in Maryland, a debate that may echo parts of the national conversation triggered by protests in Ferguson, Missouri, and Staten Island, New York, of police officers allegedly using excessive force against suspects. Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake and several delegates representing the city are calling for changes in the 40-year-old state law known as the Police Officers' Bill of Rights, which sets out the disciplinary procedures of police departments in Maryland. Interest in revising parts of the law followed the Baltimore Sun's expose last fall titled Undue Force, which examined lawsuits against Baltimore City since 2011 alleging police misconduct and found that the city has paid $5.7 million in 102 court judgments or settlements. The investigative reporter behind that expose, Mark Puente, joins me now to discuss it and legislative changes that may grow out of it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the 74 law, the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, let's talk about your reporting about complaints of police brutality. What kind of pattern did you find?
The pattern showed that officers were accused of brutality after questionable arrests. These cases that we looked at weren't people shooting each other on a corner or drug dealers fighting each other. It was an 87-year-old grandmother, a 26-year-old accountant, a church deacon, a lady selling raffle tickets. In all of these lawsuits, just about all of them, they were charged with hindrance, obstruction, disorderly conduct, and prosecutors later dropped all the charges. A lot of people had broken bones, black eyes, and they sued the city, and they either went to court and a jury awarded the plaintiffs money or the city settled with these individuals.
And you found some police officers were...
We found some officers were sued multiple times. And during the course of our investigation, the city said they weren't aware that some officers had been sued multiple times until we pointed it out to them because their names kept popping up in our files that we were looking at. And they said they're going to change that. They admitted they had a lax tracking system and they weren't monitoring it very well.
When Police Commissioner Batts was on Dan Roderick's Midday Show last week, he said that most of the cases in your reporting, the incidents behind them were several years ago, and they said basically things have changed. Do you have a sense of that?
When he said that, and the mayor had said that in their initial reaction to our story, we're now looking at their current lawsuits because there's still a significant amount that have been filed, and I'm going through those now as we speak. And I had one story a few weeks ago that I found in there about a horse bit a child, but that wasn't part of police brutality. But there's still lawsuits filed.
The number of cases that you found, unusually high? Normal for a city this size?
Well, compared to other cities, I didn't ask for how many lawsuits were filed in comparable size areas. I looked at the dollar figures. Dallas had paid just the same amount of money, but they only paid out in 26 cases compared to 102 because they don't have a cap down there. They paid out much more per case.
But there were fewer cases, apparently.
There were fewer cases, correct. The cap has saved taxpayers here millions.
Under the 1974 state law, how does a complaint unfold? When a complaint is made before against a police officer?
Well, and it's a resident can file a complaint with the police department. The internal affairs will get involved. At some point, the resident has to swear under oath and sign an affidavit of the allegations. In our investigation, we found that many people are intimidated by the officers. They said that the internal affairs detectives treated them like suspects and like criminals, like they were lying to them, and that turned them off, and they stopped the process.
They went to court.
No, they stopped the process as far as filing the complaint, so the complaint never got followed through. And some of these officers have repeat instances like this, and nothing ever happens to them because of that. So the individual or resident files their report, it's investigated, and then if something happens to the officer, we'll never know because personnel laws shield all that information from the public.
You wrote, the law mandates that disciplinary actions against police go through a three-person trial board, which makes decisions based on the preponderance of the evidence. Who makes up these boards in most cases?
That's changed recently. It's now officers within the command structure. They've changed it in Baltimore to where it's now skewed towards management. And they're saying that they're crediting that for pushing these cases faster. They had a backlog of cases a few years ago, and they're moving those off the rolls now. So,
and is that that board, that three-person board, part of the structure set up by the Police Bill of Rights?
Yes, that's mandated from that, and they have to follow that law.
The Baltimore Police Department's violent crime enforcement unit was the target of most of the citizen complaints that you reported on. Why do you think that unit was at the center of the city's police misconduct?
From everything I gleaned from talking to people who were familiar with that, including council members, crime had spiked back then. The prior commissioner wanted crime to come down. He gave this office these units leeway or power to go out and make crime go down. And they went out and they did that, but there was an after effect of heavy-handed tactics. And eventually, when Commissioner Batts took over in late 2012, he disbanded that unit.
So it's gone.
It's gone, but it's rebranded. It depends who you talk to. It's about half the size. It's called Special Enforcement Section now. And many of the same officers are still on it, but you still hear from people who says that they still do similar tactics or antics.
And looking at the current cases you've been looking at, does it show up there in the way that the old unit used to show up?
I haven't got that far running names through databases, but similar stuff has shown up.
That's Baltimore Sun investigative reporter Mark Puente here on Maryland Morning, WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about how the General Assembly may respond to Puente's reporting on brutality complaints against Baltimore police. So I gather the mayor and some legislators in Baltimore believe that the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights is too protective of police. What elements of the law are they concerned about?
They're concerned about the 10-day waiting period that officers have to obtain a lawyer when they're questioned in internal investigations. That's one of the biggest complaints. The mayor has said the police commissioner doesn't have the authority to discipline somebody or get them off the streets. If you go back to last summer when that individual officer was shown on the tape beating that suspect at a bus stop, they still had to pay him until he was charged with the crime. So sometimes they sit on a desk job or with no police powers for months. Some have sat there for years, still collecting a paycheck until they're charged with their crime. There's nothing they can do.
And I believe me, as a citizen, I feel the frustration of that. But that inability to separate an officer from salary doesn't really keep the department from disciplining that officer.
Well, they can't discipline them until that process has run its course. There's an administrative investigation, and then there's a criminal investigation. So the administrative one is not going to be done, or they're not going to finish that until the criminal side is done, so they can see how they match up to each other.
Do you have a sense of how the law in Maryland compares to elsewhere in the country?
Well, I found that a University of Maryland study, I think 10 or 12 years ago, showed that everybody but Rhode Island, Maryland is second to Rhode Island. Maryland is the second most restrictive or has the most protections for officers.
And so what kind of changes are being sought?
There's a lot of changes. They're all in discussions now. Delegates Anderson and Carter have kind of led this charge.
Delegate Kurt Anderson and Jill Carter.
They want to change that 10-day waiting period. They've held community meetings asking for input from residents before the session had started last week. And it's all on the table right now. Who knows where it'll go? Before any changes can be made, they've got to overcome powerful lobbyists from the Fraternal Order of Police, the State Police Chiefs Association, and the State Sheriff's Group, because they're all saying, which we've reported, that Baltimore's problems aren't occurring throughout the state and calls aren't being made from other people that they need to change this law.
So this is very much a Baltimore City initiative.
Correct.
In Annapolis.
Correct.
To make changes.
If I can interrupt Delegate Joseph Valerio in charge of the House Judiciary Committee, who has to sign off on any of these changes, he had said when he was in Baltimore a few months ago, there won't be any carve-outs for Baltimore. It's going to be a one-size-fits-all, so it's got to apply statewide. That's a big hurdle to overcome. And they know that going into it.
Does the current law include citizen review, or is that part of what is being discussed?
That's one of the biggest issues that the critics of this law have talked about. They want more more power to the civilian review boards to be able to offer discipline and be involved in the process. That's one of the biggest changes to come out of these community meetings legislators have held.
And the setup under the current law would not allow that as a local option.
They don't have much power, the current situation. And even the own board members have said that recently.
Is there a case that you covered in your review that sticks with you more than the others?
Probably the case of the 87-year-old grandmother, Venus Green. She called police saying her grandson had been shot. She needed help. Officers arrived at her house. The situation went bad. She says the officer handcuffed her, threw her against the wall, then picked her up, threw her against the room, handcuffed. yelled at her, called her derogatory terms. Not until their black officer showed up did they undo the handcuffs. And she sued, and they settled for, I think, $95,000 or $120,000, I think. That jumped out just for the fact of her age.
And do you have a sense from your reporting of I mean, we talked about, for example, that the unit that was at the center of many of the complaints has been disbanded. How else has the situation changed?
For that unit, they mandated that these officers cannot wear just jeans and T-shirts or sweatshirts. And another one of the cases that jumped out in the story was an officer got on the stand to testify and said he had this defendant or suspect in custody. He couldn't explain how his nose got smashed and why there's blood gushing from his face. He said maybe he poked himself in the eyes. This guy didn't know that these individuals were officers. They were wearing hooded sweatshirts and baseball caps and jeans. Now these officers have to wear insignia that label identify them police with badges, and they have much more tighter controls, according to the deputy police commissioner. So that's changed.
Another one of your stories pointed out that Baltimore City requires essentially people involved in settlements to keep quiet about them. Is that mandated by the state law, or is that only true in the city?
That's a city practice. As a reaction to our stories, talking about that non-disparagement clause, you accept a payment from the city, you say you'll never talk publicly to the media about the case. And a lot of people took issue with that clause because they're saying it's helped create this system of all these lawsuits and people aren't aware of this. And the mayor did come out and say that they're studying practices in other cities to see if it's a best practice. We did a story checking with similar-sized cities, and many cities do not have the similar practice. They don't put restrictions on people. Once they pay them the money for settlement, they're free to talk with whoever they want. And the mayor has vowed that if she finds similar comparisons, she will do away with that practice.
Thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Thanks very much. Mark Puente is a Baltimore Sun investigative reporter. At our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, we have links to some of his reporting on the Baltimore City Police. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on the show, we learn about blending old-time music and crankies. Then we'll know what a cranky is. Stay with us.